Francis calls God's law unjust and Biden DocuGate. In this 29th episode of Church and State, Brian McCall and Christopher Ferrara address the most depraved statements of Francis to date, flaunting God's created order and his natural law. The ongoing controversy over politicians mishandling top secret documents, and the greatest public health debacle in the history of mankind.
Welcome to another edition of Church and State with Chris Ferrara and Brian McCall, where we discuss two stories relevant to church and state that is crumbling all around us. So how are you doing, Chris?
All things considered, with the looming apocalypse, not too bad.
Not too bad. Well, we're going to start with the apocalypse in Rome. So we had two interesting announcements this week that really go together. One is the Pope has announced the person who will preach a retreat to the Synod of Bishops when they get together in Rome for their Synod on Synods on Synods on Synods, the crazy Synod on Synodality. Well, it is a Father Timothy Radcliffe.
Oh, not that guy.
Oh, yes. For his support for homosexuals has made him obviously one of the most controversial non-Jesuits in the church. That's who Pope Francis chose to be the retreat preacher to preach to the bishops a several-day retreat before they start considering all the crazy topics in the Synod on Synodality. Coming just a few days after that, Francis gave an interview to the Associated Press because he likes to pronounce things by press conference and by media interview, in which he condemned, quote, unjust legislation criminalizing same-sex relationships. He said, quote, being homosexual is not a crime, in an interview, again, was published this week with the Associated Press. He also said that the church has a duty to work to have these laws overturned, and that some Catholic bishops who support laws against sodomy have to have a process of conversion.
Unbelievable.
Seems like Warren Berger might actually be more Catholic than the Pope. But
well, this Pope apparently is all about sodomy.
Yes.
He's surrounded by sodomites in the Vatican, as we now know. As Benedict revealed, in many chancery offices and in many dioceses, there are homosexual clubs. I remember when I was at the North American College during the explosion of the pedophile scandal, so-called, which is actually a homosexual predation scandal, back in 2000. Yes. And I asked Wilton Gregory what they were doing to implement the pre-Vatican II instruction that effeminate men, men with effeminate tendencies, should not be admitted to seminary. What are you doing to implement that? Because this is obviously a big problem now. You know what he said? This was reported in the New York Times. He said, it's a constant struggle to keep homosexuals from becoming a majority of the priesthood in America. Wilton Gregory said this in the New York Times. Now we have a pope who's basically coddling the sodomites. He's coddling them. What do you mean it's not a crime? It's a sin. One of the sins that cries out to heaven for vengeance. It is, as St. Paul teaches, men with men working that which is filthy. Now you mentioned Justice Berger. I'm thinking of the case of Bowers versus Hardwick, later reversed by the Supreme Court in the Lawrence versus Texas decision. But in Bowers versus Hardwick, the Supreme Court refused to set aside laws which were precisely laws criminalizing the crime of sodomy. And here's what Justice Berger said in his concurring opinion. As the court notes, meaning the majority with whom he joins, the prescriptions against sodomy have very ancient roots. Decisions of individuals relating to homosexual conduct have been subject to state intervention throughout the history of Western civilization. Condemnation of those practices is firmly rooted in Judeo-Christian moral and ethical standards. Homosexual sodomy was a capital crime under Roman law. During the English Reformation, when powers of ecclesiastical courts were transferred to the king's courts, the first English statute criminalizing sodomy was passed. The common law of England, including its prohibition of sodomy, became the received law of Georgia and other colonies. To hold that the act of homosexual sodomy is somehow protected as a fundamental right would be to cast aside millennia of moral teaching. And now this character, we have to call him that, who occupies the chair of Peter, who says one scandalous thing after another for almost 10 years now, tells us that homosexuality, or rather sodomy, is not a crime. Now,
well, and in fact, a law, this is the key, a law prohibiting it is unjust. So that means
now,
you have a right to do it.
Yes, you can argue not very persuasively that it would be imprudent to criminalize sodomy because the St. Thomas teaches not every vice can be the subject of a criminal prohibition, but sodomy is certainly one of those vices. It erodes the social order, attacks the foundation of the family, promotes disease spread, as the AIDS epidemic attests, not to mention all the other diseases associated with that disgusting behavior. So you can make a serious argument that it would not be imprudent, but actually quite prudent to criminalize sodomy. But he doesn't say it's imprudent, which at least would be arguable. He says it's unjust. Unjust to criminalize conduct criminalized throughout the history of Western civilization, a prohibition rooted in the Judeo-Christian ethic, says Justice Berger, a Presbyterian. This is just mind-boggling. Unbelievable.
Well, and again, you draw that, and this is often what this Jesuitical mind will do. It takes proper distinctions, but turns them on their head and manipulates them. So there are distinctions between civil law, secular law, crime, and sins. Although even in Latin, the term delict can refer to both. I mean, it can refer to both a crime and a sin.
Right.
So there's a connection. But really, the main difference is that it is unjust. When it comes to criminal law, it is unjust to punish anything that you have a moral right to do. So it's unjust, for example, to prohibit parents from raising their children, right? It is unjust to, prohibit you from maintaining your own source of your own sustenance, right? So things you have a right to do, it's unjust to ban. So he turns that on its head because, you do not have a right to do something intrinsically evil. But then secondly, the state has a right to prohibit sins, immoral acts, which harm the common good. And as you said, civilizations as different as medieval Europe, Protestant England, and pagan Rome outlawed this because it strikes at the social fabric. It destroys the cell of society, the family, because
what
it is
absolutely,
not, yes.
What's absolutely unbelievable here is that he goes even further and says bishops who uphold the bimillennial ethic condemning sodomy and appropriately criminalizing it, those bishops need to undergo a conversion?
Right.
He says this is a matter of religious obligation to fight for the elimination of laws punishing sodomy? By the way, when, if ever, I don't see any indication that he ever did this, when has this pope ever called for bishops and others to work for the elimination of all laws permitting abortion? When has he ever said that? Never.
He said the opposite. He said, oh, you focus too much on abortion.
Yeah. Well, our Lord said, where your heart is, there your treasure is also. I think we can see where his heart is. His heart is on eliminating prohibitions against sodomy. And what do we draw from that? I'll let you draw your own conclusions. They're not good.
Right. Well, and again, you're right that St. Thomas says you don't necessarily, as a ruler of civil society, have to punish all sins. Now, one reason is if you've got such a wicked, perverse society that it would just, and right now, it'd just be impossible to outlaw this because it would make a mockery of the law because you wouldn't be able to. Then, okay, for prudence, you might say we need to do some things. Now, if he had at least, again, that's a debatable point. If he at least said the modern world is so mired in sin that right now we can't focus on this, we should be trying to end abortion first, right? Okay, you might say I disagree with you, but you have an arguable case. But in no case can you say, again, you have a right to have these laws repealed because the law can never promote, even if it doesn't punish it, it can never promote that which you have no right to do. And, by calling it unjust, that's exactly what he's doing. He's promoting
it. Let's focus on what this Roman pontiff, if you must call him that, is actually saying here. He is saying.
Well, he doesn't even call himself that, by the way. He just calls himself Francis.
Yeah, he dropped that title in the annuario.
Yes.
What he's saying is that laws criminalizing sodomy are immoral. What can one say?
Well, I can only imagine what Father Radcliffe's retreat will be about. In fact, I might say to a bishop, you better not go to the retreat. It might endanger your soul.
I don't know. This is just the latest example of his so-called outreach to the LGBTQ plus community, which has been the hallmark of his pontificate. And that is essentially coddling and condoning sexual depravity.
Yes.
Again and again and again and again. For the last 10 years. And then he says, well, you know, men are men, which is why they have to look at pornography. Speaking of priests who view pornography, he became angry at the notion that there was something terribly wrong about this, that it had to be rooted out of the clergy. I mean, he does say elsewhere that viewing pornography is sinful, but then he tries to justify it out of the other side of his mouth by saying, well, they're men. What do you expect? They look at that kind of thing.
Well, it's like his justification of adultery in Amoris Laetitia. It's not really the ideal, but, you know, people do it. So what can we say?
Yeah, they can have stable adulterous unions.
Right.
So this is a pope who has spent the better part of 10 years attacking the very foundations of the moral order, which takes this crisis in the church to a whole new level. Before, it was merely, quote-unquote, doctrine and dogma. Now it's the natural law under attack. And not only that, when he condones the transsexuals that he has parading in and out of the Vatican for special audiences, one of whom he paid the travel expenses for, when he does that, he's attacking something even deeper than the natural law. He's attacking the created order of being itself.
Yes.
Man and woman, he created them, says the Bible. But according to Francis, you can be flexible in that regard. You can be a man, you can be a woman, you can be a man-woman, a woman-man, or something in between, and... Or neither.
Well, you don't understand, Chris, that you're not reading that line correctly. Man and women, he created them. That them refers to a single person. He created them both, men and women. So, see, this is how these people think. But in any event, not only that, he's actually imprudent himself, talking about prudence, because Francis utters this interview just days before he goes to visit South Sudan, a deeply Islamic country that outlaws sodomy. So he's showing up, like, from a diplomatic point of view, he's about to go to a country that he's just proclaimed to the world has got unjust laws. Not a really smart way for his ecumenism to get along with everybody. He's, you know, clearly about attacking a country he's about to go visit.
Well, you know, let's talk about what they do in certain Islamic countries, which is an abuse, by the way, of the law.
Yeah.
Something Catholics would never condone. When they catch someone in the act of committing sodomy, they throw them off a roof.
Yeah.
Now, the death penalty, it was a capital offense, sodomy, in pagan Rome, but we're not pagans.
Yes.
So there's a moderated approach to the prohibition of vices, such as this one, which is a capital vice. And you make a very valid point that because our society is so corrupt, the law is essentially unenforceable, and it would do more harm than good. But that's not his argument.
No.
His argument is that laws prohibiting sodomy are per se immoral and must be repealed. Because
yes.
They're unjust / immoral.
Yes.
Which is astonishing.
Absolutely.
Although from this pope, not astonishing. I mean,
well,
every day he utters some heresy.
That's the problem. Every day you don't know what's going to come next. Well, let's move from the deep church to the deep state.
Must read.
Well, it's one pocket to the other, one side of the coin to the other. They both work for the same boss. But, you know, going to Washington, D.C., the Biden administration found itself in a sticky wicket, as the English would say, after spending months railing against former President Donald Trump for having classified documents which he had the absolute power to declassify in his home and having FBI raids and all this. Then, lo and behold, it turns out, not as president when he had the power to declassify, but as vice president, Joe Biden had a whole bunch of these documents, here, there, everywhere. Right?
Five different locations at last count.
And every time they come out, it's, we found them all. Here are the last documents. The next day, here's some more. It's documents here, documents there, documents everywhere. It really shows, first of all, the hypocrisy and the weaponization of the justice system. And then number two, really what's different about this is this is a man who, notwithstanding the media trying to cover it up, who's basically a foreign operative. This is a man who, as vice president, was having his son receive millions of dollars from enemies of the United States to essentially peddle influence, and then he's got top secret, we don't know exactly what they say, but confidential documents in the United States in his house. Kind of a concern, wouldn't you say?
Well, we just found out yesterday that clearly on the basis of classified information prepared by a diplomatic professional, Hunter Biden sent a letter to his contacts in Ukraine with about 20 different points on U.S. policy toward Ukraine and the likely consequences of this or that Ukrainian action, written in very precise diplomatic language with the usual diplomatic abbreviations indicating a professional wrote the thing. And at that time, he was a raving drug addict who had just been booted out of the Navy because he couldn't pass a routine drug test. So this loser, this lowlife, who had no skills whatsoever at that point, no expertise whatsoever in Ukrainian energy issues, sends them a precisely worded 20-point memo, which is obviously based on some sort of briefing document pertaining to Ukraine that his father had in his possession. So, yeah, what this means, of course, and then we know, of course, that now Vice President Pence has turned up some documents in his house. So I'd just love to see how they're going to concoct any kind of case against Trump at this point. I guess that's pretty much over now.
It's got to be. Or, you know, you have basically every former vice president and president locked up somewhere.
Yeah, that's over and done with. There's not going to be any indictment of Trump for that. They'll find something else. They're looking every day for some reason to indict him. I'm particularly worried about that situation in Georgia, where Trump is threatened with an indictment for, quote, interfering in the election after the election was over.
I mean, this whole thing has been an indictment and one of a crime. Wait, we're indicting him. We'll let you know what the crime is later.
Well, he made a phone call. He said, find 11,000 votes, meaning the votes that they probably threw in the garbage. But right. They're trying to construe that as manufacture ballots. That's not what he meant, obviously.
Right.
So that grand jury has finished its work, issued a report. And one person, based on that report, has been handed up for indictment. But now a separate grand jury has to be convened to see if anyone else can be indicted. And the Times is saying that Trump is in grave legal jeopardy for interfering in an election by questioning its legitimacy. You're not allowed to question the legitimacy of elections anymore unless you're a Democrat.
Right. Then you're allowed.
Yes.
Well,
then you're allowed.
Let me tell you my theory, though, on this Biden document gate that's going on. I actually think this was a calculated, not necessarily created, maybe the documents were found, but used by the left as a major distraction. And the news media is right there to help them. Focus everybody's attention over here because there's something else going on. And what's been going on during this story is even more and more information about the COVID debacle, the public health debacle that was the jabs that they forced on, well, about 2/3 of Americans, according to their numbers. Because interesting, right as this story came out is when quietly the CDC was allowing some information on their website, even more and the string of public figures who were just dying suddenly. I think that this was, let's create a big story about Biden to draw people's attention away. And again, maybe it's something else, but to me, it seems like there was a real crescendo of evidence against this gene therapy that was coming out then that I wonder if that's what this was. Let's create a ruckus over here. We'll have it all go away. Biden will be fine, but it'll distract everyone in the news cycle from what's going on. I don't know what you're
saying. Yeah, it'll distract us, among other things, from the stories of all these young people dropping dead on athletic playing fields,
yes.
Newscasters dropping dead in the middle of newscasts, politicians dropping dead at the age of 50 or 45, some age where you wouldn't expect anything like that to happen. And, of course, we have statistics now from the UK and Germany on all-cause mortality skyrocketing in perfect synchronization with the introduction of these stupid booster shots that do nothing. You know, we litigated, the Thomas More Society attorneys, I was one of them, litigated against all the COVID regime restrictions from the beginning. So we said from the beginning, the masks don't work. The lockdowns don't work. Then the vaccinators came forth. And we said the vaccines don't work. In fact, they're counterproductive. We were derided as being against the science. Courts were deferring to this pseudoscience, which is really political science. And in the end, it turned out that the masks don't work, as everyone admits. The lockdowns were worse than useless. And the vaccines not only don't prevent transmission, they seem to facilitate infection. The more doses you have and the adverse effects in terms of cardiac events, strokes, and all kinds of other adverse effects. And from Bell's palsy on, there's a list of them, about 20 of them. And that's turning out to be more and more evident by the day, so that the vaccinators have imposed upon this country the greatest debacle in the history of public health. And they refuse to admit it. They're still pushing the stupid booster shots.
They're pushing full steam ahead. Again, they announced, well, we just want to move to a single-year booster every year for the rest of your life. It's full employment for the big pharma is really what they...
The annual useless booster shot, just as useless as the flu shots, which are at best 40% effective. They don't do a thing, really. And so that's where we are. We're in a situation where there's a new paradigm now whenever there's a pandemic. I don't think they'll go back to the lockdowns, but they may go back to the nonsensical vaccine mandates, the nonsensical, totally immoral and unjust vaccine mandates. I mean, it's become a civic ritual. It's a Democrat civic ritual. If you want to belong to our society, which we now control, you have to have this stuff injected into you, whether it works or not. Just get the jab. Otherwise, you're not one of us. You're not part of our society. That's exactly what Mayor de Blasio said. If you want to participate fully in our society, you've got to be vaccinated. So New York actually had a vaccine passport regime where you didn't have a social life, essentially. No social life at all. You couldn't access any of the venues for social activity unless you had the useless jab.
Well, and again, I think you've written this. It really was, and this is what happens in the absence of the true religion, it was turning the COVIDians into a religion, a substitute religion. They had their vestments or their masks. They had their religious sacraments, which are essentially this jab. They had their doctrines. It really is in a very, you know, satanic way, a substitute form of social religion is what they attempted to establish.
Yeah. I mean, look at the United States Congress on the congressional side, which was then controlled by the Democrats on the House side, rather. Everyone had his mask on because Nancy Pelosi demanded it. Walk across the hall to the Senate side, no masks.
Right.
Utterly ridiculous. Yes. And people went along with it. This is the frightening thing, how sheep-like the masses are. They're given an absolutely absurd command, and they obey it unquestioningly. It doesn't bode well for the next dictatorial move that people will just abjectly submit to.
Well, it's like Chesterton said, I don't know why they call it common sense, because it doesn't seem very common.
He also said, by the way, when the big laws fall away, meaning the moral law, the little laws proliferate.
Yes.
And that's what we saw at the time the Roman Empire was collapsing. That's exactly what we saw, thousands of little regulations, but no morality. And what we have in this country is thousands of little regulations and no morality. Worse, an anti-morality imposed by the state.
Well,
look at the Pope Francis when it comes to sodomy.
Exactly. That's
unbelievable.
One. But no, you're absolutely right. That is when the moral and natural law go away, you get a sea of law. And that's where we are. I mean, this country, now the statutes of the United States for most of this country's history could fit in one or two books, right? Now you need a library to keep track of the federal regulations that are there. And it almost makes a mockery of the idea that ignorance of law is no excuse, right? The old Roman aphorism, ignorance of law is no excuse, because number one, the law is just a reflection of natural law. You should know it. And number two, it's knowable. I mean, you could go to law school for 20 years and still not even read all of the laws that we're governed by. So that, at Chesterton.
You wrote a book, a major book on this, right? The
yes.
Architecture of Law?
Yes.
Yeah. I have to go get a copy of that and learn something.
You do have to. I can't believe you don't have a copy yet.
I should have. I'm ashamed. But anyway, so much for church and state. They're both going down the tube. So what do we do next?
Well, there'll be more tubes to go down in a few weeks. So we'll hopefully come back there.
Well, you know, we have the providential view of things. So this is all in divine providence. We accept it for what it is. It's something that God has permitted in his infinite wisdom. We don't know why he's permitting this. But there's never a situation in which the evil that God permits does not result in a greater good as the outcome. So sooner or later, the greater good will manifest itself. Where sin abounds, grace abounds much more, as St. Paul teaches so famously.
Exactly. And again, if it weren't so dramatic, what God does to repair and to bring good out of this would be not so miraculous, right? If the crucifixion was so intense and so just unbelievable in the amount of pain inflicted upon our Lord, because it makes the fact of his resurrection all that more impressive. So you know, that there must be something that God has in store for us that is going to be merited by all of this. But all we have to do is remain faithful, because we know what Catholics have always and everywhere believed cannot change, no matter what the man in white occupying the chair of Peter happens to be telling the Associated Press today. And so we have everything we need to get through this crisis. We just cling to what has always been known.
And sooner or later, this pope will pass into history and hopefully will be quickly forgotten and replaced by someone who actually resembles a Catholic pontiff.
Or resembles a Catholic.
A Catholic period, exactly.
Right, exactly.
Or at least, yeah, or someone who at least believes in God. Because this God that he's promoting doesn't seem to be the God of the Old or the New Testament.
It's the God of the Francis Testament, I guess. Well, there you go. Thanks for your time again, Chris, and hopefully, God willing, we'll see you again in a few weeks.
If there's still a place on earth for us to do the broadcast.
Take care.
God bless.
Church and State with Brian McCall and Christopher Ferrara is brought to you by the Fatima Center. Copyright 2023, all rights reserved. The message of Fatima is the solution for our time. Only she can help us. It is therefore urgent that we live according to Our Lady's message and share it with everyone we know. For more resources and to support this vital apostolate with your donation, visit our website, fatima.org, or call us at 1-800-263-8160. Our Lady of the Rosary, pray for us, and long live Christ the King.